Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We shall take a look into the market outlook of the end of this year, as well as perhaps the entire year of next year. Joining me in the studio is none other than a good friend of the show, Munira Khairuddin, the country head and CEO of Principal Malaysia. How you've been, Munira?
I've been good.
I know a lot of us have been travelling. I don't know whether you've been travelling, and I hope you are keeping well.
I have. And it's great to be back and to see, you know, the budget all announced, and very excited.
You were not in the country when the budget was announced. So here's the thing about travelling, right? Everything focuses on the ringgit. It has been marching towards 5.0. As last count, I think it's 4.74 as of this morning. It does show no sense of abating, and we're looking at the ringgit continuously being devalued. We're looking at the monetary policy tightening around the world. Perhaps one would argue that the US has reached its end of its monetary policy tightening rate. Malaysia skipped two rate meetings, I suppose, in terms of hiking. One could argue that this would be it. There could be a possibility of one more rate hike at the end of the year. These are the kind of conversations that we're looking at when we look at how we can maximize the ringgit even further. Let's do a quick look of the third quarter of this year and perhaps benchmark it against the fourth quarter of this year. What would be some of the expectations that you would see or expect coming in for the final part of this year?
I think, you know, I'd like to take that horizon a little further than just the fourth quarter, third and fourth quarter. But you see, when you look into US, they are at that cusp. When you say that, oh, inflation has totally abated, has it? Not really, actually. So when you go to the US, you can actually feel that I think the Fed is pausing to watch, and that's important because the signs of inflation are still there, right? There are indications like non-farm payroll, etc., which has decelerated, but still, right, you could feel the real economy, you know, it's still high prices, oil prices, etc. So it would be wise to wait and see. And therefore, the global expectation has just gone a little bit chaotic because they thought that Fed is done and Fed's going to cut. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the case. So ringgit versus, I don't have a crystal ball, but one indicator we like to look at is the interest rate differential. Mm-hmm. Real interest rates. So yeah, I think ringgit will find its course, will stabilize again, will go higher again. Mm-hmm. But the interest rate differential to the US is still quite big, and this US pausing is causing it, in my view. So the dollar strength is causing it. Once we have a better feel, I think then, you know, we will look to better days of the ringgit.
Okay. But when we look at the global equities, for instance, it has given up some gains over the past 3 months or so, except for maybe China. What's your feel in terms of where the market is going to lead in terms of the global equity markets for the fourth quarter? And how does this fit in the Asian or developing markets equities right now?
So it's very interesting. I was on a roadshow with our fund managers, our global fund managers, and trying to, you know, get a feel of where they're investing and customers' appetite. The appetite to emerging markets actually hasn't gone away. It has gone via, you know, investing in multinationals, in global multinationals.
So situated in Asia.
Yes. Okay. So arguably, right, you get better stability and risk premium and valuation when you invest in a global stock. You know, UK stock, European stock that has exposure in China, and you don't get the volatility of China. So the pros and cons to that is you feel, okay, Asia is not all lost, but the cons to it is, you know, if only they would have come directly into Asian equities. But it gives us some glimmer of hope because the world is so interconnected, right? You could get a good valuation investing in a company that has China exposure. That valuation is, the risk premium is a lot lesser, and so you're in there. So it is a development to be watched, because I think, you know, the valuations in Asia today is really good. We haven't even touched mid cap, you know, innovative stocks, for example. If you have the appetite, I think one should remain invested, and just ride
and
it.
Hold it on. Yeah.
And ride it, yeah.
One could also argue that because of how the world is so interconnected now more than ever, mm-hmm. what about the geopolitical risk that seems to be rising? The risk premium on this topic has been, of course, being heavily debated. The ongoing current war in Gaza, mm-hmm. in Israel, Ukraine and Russia is not abating. Some sense of heightened security situation that is currently happening across the Taiwanese Strait mm-hmm. Against Chinese Taipei and mainland China. Do you see all this going to be driving up the risk premium right now?
Yeah, you know, politics and geopolitics is one of the most difficult area, and it's hard to put a valuation to it. Mm. Last week I did not feel it would, but I think there will be some noise, mm-hmm. And the tensions have escalated. Mm-hmm. So it is, I think we need to err on caution. Mm-hmm. But still remain positive on our long-term views. In fact, for the next 6 months, we are into income, mm-hmm. right? So I know fixed income sounds a little bit overplayed, mm-hmm. but there is now income in fixed income. There's more income in fixed income with higher yields. So mm-hmm. our view is that to remain quite neutral on equities and even fixed income. Mm-hmm. And watch how this plays out.
2023 saw a very strange moment where both fixed income as well as equities saw a drop in a lot of markets. Do you see that happening this time round based on the fact that you're saying that bonds, for instance, might see an uptake following this year's situation?
Yeah, I feel like I want to say it's going to be a year of two halves, that we're going to still get risk aversion, and therefore fixed income still has a little bit more runway, and mm-hmm. income, as I mentioned, the yield part. Mm-hmm. But I do think, I'm hoping that second half we start to see, because some of the equity valuations is really quite attractive, mm-hmm. that the market will come to its senses and you'll see a better, and there is, of course, on the caveat that, China starts to come back.
Mm-hmm. Let's ignore developing markets per se and focus a little bit more on Asia. Mm-hmm. Do you think that developed markets are going to be outperforming Asia per se? I'm not talking about LATAM and all the other stuff, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. yeah, developed markets versus Asia. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the comparison here in terms of market viability for investors?
Yeah, so I think I do think developed markets will win over Asia in this short term. Mm. However, as I mentioned, right, if you're a good stock picker, you would find this kind of a global exposure and then vis-a-vis into some of these, good Asian stocks, Asian mm-hmm. companies. Mm-hmm. So global and with some exposure via the global stocks on Asian companies.
Disrupting technology. 2023 is the year of AI. In mm-hmm. fact, if I were the, time editing-chief, person of the year would be AI, whoever that person is, ChatGPT or the likes. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that these type of kind of disrupting technologies in terms of AI and machine learning and many mm-hmm. more are going to be driving the kind of activities that we see across the globe, where corporates are going to be a little bit more optimal, or at least theoretically? Or do you feel that a lot more time is needed before we can actually see how AI and technology-themed mm-hmm. stocks are going to be bringing about impact for investors?
Mm-hmm. I think within a subset of tech, people always say global tech is overvalued. But when you think about the innovation that is in the pipeline, there's still runway to go. Mm. So I absolutely agree that, areas like AI, blockchain, all those areas, right, still has a long runway to go. Mm-hmm. There's a few themes, circular themes, that I think will remain in our markets. Mm-hmm. Things like technology with a pivot to AI, mm-hmm. biotechnology, mm-hmm. food security, mm-hmm. healthcare. Mm-hmm. So those are circular trends and lifestyle. Those are circular trends that I don't think will abate or go away, and we're quite bullish, actually.
One theme that you mentioned just now, healthcare and pharmaceuticals, I would argue, have been the core theme or thematic theme that many investors and stock pickers are looking at for the past 2 or 3 years following mm-hmm. the COVID epidemic. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that is going to be continuously growing even more so, or do you think that other themes are going to, say, supersede mm-hmm. the conversations that we spoke just now in terms of mm-hmm. thematic investments?
I think those themes will continue to grow, but you're going to get an even deeper theme around biotechnology, right? I was in Europe, and we were talking about how food security, right? Mm-hmm. You would think this food security would be into, I don't know, a crop or plantation, mm-hmm. but food security, we are talking about, you know, biotechnology in enzymes. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you prolong a bread shelf life from a 3 days to a 2 weeks? Mm. So those kind of technology, right, I think is very exciting. I think that healthcare plus biotech is going to take us. It's going to come. It's already in the making.
A little bit more on fixed income assets. We're looking at the US Fed having raised 500 bips since March last year, 100 bips this year. Doesn't look like it's going to end soon, as per what we discussed earlier. How do you think this will bring about the potential impacts of fixed income assets, at least here in Malaysia and perhaps even in Asia?
Actually, so long as the differential to the US is not too big, I think a fixed asset, fixed income as an asset class is still very, that's still a positive carry. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, let's bring the income to fixed income, is higher yields. I think actually consumer sentiment has been quite good in latching on to fixed income ideas. You'd be surprised, because in a world of heightened geopolitical risk, you know, stock markets aversion, fixed income tends to be like a safe haven. So I think it still has a little bit of runway. As I mentioned, you know, it is quite wise of the Fed to not jump into just cutting the rates, and I think they've been quite, you know, they've been quite clear that they're watching this space, because inflation is still around, right? You don't want to prematurely, you know, bring
stop
it down,
rate,
and then the bubble comes again.
Yeah.
So, I'm quite bullish on fixed income. At the same time, looking out for really interesting valuations in equities. We haven't touched about real assets, Ibrahim. So there's been a plethora of real assets or private assets, if you like, such as direct lending, such as private equities, such as real estate investments. Mm-hmm. So I find that these asset classes do give a very interesting, you know, risk-reward return, and could... potentially, this is more for institutional or high net worth base, but it is an asset class to be looked at.
When you say real asset class that needs to be looked at, what excites you on this particular asset class? Is there any particular geography that you are looking at, a particular area of interest that might see some stimulating growth moving forward?
We see a lot of growth actually in the US and Europe. In Asia, to a certain extent, themes like data centers, hyperscale data centers. These are some of the areas that Principal is quite good at. Hyperscale data centers, we see real estate portfolios, we see infrastructure being also part of that demand pool. Geography-wise, it's still the developed markets. I think Asia is trying. There is a correlation between equity markets to private markets as well.
Yeah.
When you think about it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think building that pipeline is important. I was talking about even the Malaysian stock market, right? In order to for us to boost further and have more interesting IPOs to come, I think it's great that, you know, the government and institutions are putting investment aside on VCs, right, on PEs, because we need new ideas. We need new hybrid, new breed of companies to come to our stock market. So I think for Asia, for Malaysia in particular, let's try to groom those VCs and PEs, and hopefully in the next, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, some of these will be very interesting IPOs.
You know, yeah, now that you've mentioned that, let's talk about budget 2024, because there are plenty of items that we can talk about the budget, but I don't want to make this conversation about the budget. Maybe you can give us your cliff notes on Belanjawan 2024. Are you positive on the sentiment? Do you think that these are going to, some of the ideas that is being brought forth is going to attract foreign investors coming in and perhaps even stimulate the domestic direct domestic investments? Where do you see budget 2024 hitting the nail on the head?
I think, you know, budget 2024 is the most expansionary that we've seen. it's great that the government is being outright about its fiscal deficit, about trying to, you know, transparency in how much needs to be paid for, you know, 1 MDB and all those excesses, mm-hmm. and that, you know, very clear on where it's going to fit in mm-hmm. the new era, as well as trying to, you know, close the gap for the rakyat. So mm-hmm. I think it's got all the right ingredients mm-hmm. To take us forward in the next 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Key is on execution. So I think markets and investors globally, locally and globally, we look into execution, how we're rolling out the National Energy Transition Plan and all those stuff that, you know, I think the government is optimistic about. So I think, in short, the markets and investors and companies are on board and hand in hand working with the government. So hopefully we'll be able to execute, and that's the key.
Do you feel that the general anticipation of these roadmaps and master plans, say for instance the new energy transition roadmap and the new industrial master plan 2030, is going to bring about what they want, which is some 10 to 20 catalytic sectors that can particularly invite billions of ringgit, perhaps even trillions of ringgit, into investment? Do you feel that that is a possibility?
I think the market and ourselves, it is a possibility. Mm. But markets are very discerning these days. We really want to see some, you know, quick good wins mm-hmm. Into some those 10, 20 items, right? And some good quick wins so that confidence will build upon confidence. Mm-hmm. So again, execution is key. And I think the whole market is behind the government on this.
Okay. As we have previously touched upon, inflation rate is high. We're looking at 8.something% in the US, but it's last year, but it has come down to about 3.7%. This is still high in terms of long-term average. Long-term average inflation rate of the US is about 3.2%, so it's still above average. Mm-hmm. We're looking at them trying to bring it down to 2%. In Malaysia, 4% inflation rate. Mm-hmm. Now it's about 1.9%, if I'm mistaken. And we're looking at many other markets still suffering from high inflation rate. Mm-hmm. Having said that, how do you look at this in contrast with Asia-Pacific region, for instance, with all this inflation rate going? We're looking at the end of third quarter, market performance is rather subdued again. China, for instance, has been a very subdued kind of market outlook right now that we see. Do you see some signs of stabilization on this? And do you feel that, you know, while you say that investors that are in play right now, they should hold their position, what about new investors? How do you think that they can maximize their thinking when it comes to looking at the Asia-Pacific region as an investment geography?
I think inflation is the most tricky bit. In fact, talking to our counterparts in China, who are they're very optimistic about China coming back mm-hmm. next year. Mm-hmm. And they said what needs
but
to
that's
be...
that's always been the theme. China will come back 2021. No, come back 2021, exactly. Come back 2022.
But having said that, when you look into the excesses that they have had, you know, being tight right now is essential. Mm-hmm. You cannot, you know, we talk a lot about, oh, could it be Asia ex China, you know, global ex China? Mm. And, you know, the answer is you can't. Mm-hmm. One can't. It's the second largest economy in the world today. Mm. You cannot ex China. Mm. So rather than exing China and miss out when China does come in, I think be neutral about it. Mm-hmm. Still remain invested, but be neutral about it. Mm-hmm. And I bet your question about inflation, right? The inflation hit is not over globally, as I mentioned. And it is important to tighten up. And the key, again, is that real interest rate differential. Who has a positive carry? Mm-hmm. And that positive carry is going to take you further. Mm-hmm. That positive carry needs to be watched very closely vis-a-vis inflation. Mm-hmm. Because if you've got, inflation, as you know, erodes currency valuation.
Yes.
So you really, really need to clamp down. My concern about Asia developing countries is headline inflation. Is this a real number? Mm. Right? So
I don't feel it's 1.9%, to be honest. And I had Maiden over, and Maiden's like, where do you shop, brother? Shop at Maiden, it'll be so cheaper. So, okay, so he's having a plug with this.
Yeah, exactly.
With this particular, supermarket brand. But generally speaking, yeah. That is the point. Yeah. I don't feel it's 1.9%.
Exactly.
So how do you see governments around the world trying to subsidize or rationalize their subsidy? Malaysia is one of it. We're trying to rationalize our subsidy fuel. A lot of countries are doing the same as well. Is this going to put a pinch in terms of the, I guess, average individual's pocket size?
For sure.
Okay. Does that mean that a lot of thinking has to go in terms of trying to continuously invest despite market softening up, different asset classes in trying to gain their footing. Where do you feel investors' mood is going to be like? Not just in Malaysia, but generally speaking around the world. Where do you see the money going to, other than, say, PEVC or private money, I suppose?
Mm. You know, we see our investors, actually, there's no panic on the street. There's no, you know, massive redemption because people are weary. People are actually remaining invested.
Mm.
So that's important, to remain invested no matter what market cycle.
Mm.
In fact, we've moved, as I mentioned, equities, fixed income, all at neutral, right? We're not asking overweight positions here. We're saying you have to remain invested because of inflation.
Mm.
If you're not invested, you know, whatever you keep in your bank account, it's going to go anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to remain.
But there's some profit-taking happening globally as well as locally.
I think the profit-taking that is happening is more looking at asset allocation, strategic asset allocation.
Mm.
Right? But real money, I haven't seen real money. Real money is probably pivoting around their strategic asset allocation. I know real money is going a lot into private assets.
Yes.
A lot into private assets.
One would argue that by the time they go to IPO, for instance, the value is done. There's nothing much you can gain from IPOs. I've seen a lot, Birkenstock, for instance, and many other IPOs that are currently happening on the NASDAQ.
Yeah,
it seems like the P's and VCs are like, you know, we've bet a long way with these guys and we're done. Thanks.
Yeah,
and then they leave it to the retail people.
It's interesting. That's an interesting trend because there's huge capital going into pre-IPO, and at IPO, it's done. So again, right, to get that post-IPO, you really need those kind of, you know, long-term innovative stocks, I think.
Yeah.
You know, consumer plays has to be very differentiated to make it big.
You know, post-IPO. I mean, look, if it's a whitewater rafting moment, let's not fight the tide and join the fun.
Yeah.
You were talking about PE and VC, looking at the possibility of emboldening them locally here, domestically.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, say, for instance, Penjana Capital and MEFCAP being the fund of funds and the likes. More money should be seen in terms of empowering local VCs and PEs to reinvigorate the growth of firms here, startups and many more here. Is that the way to go? So are we supposed to be seeing more money into these governmental organizations, Equinas and the likes, or maybe even other international VCs coming in? More money should be given there. What is the relationship between limited partners in terms of empowering these kind of private money?
That's a very difficult question and quite a narrow one, actually.
Yeah.
I think, right, we need to start from the start. You know, look at the ideation that these VCs are coming up with. And are these ideation a long-term ideation in the areas of technology, innovation, ESG? There are many private equity firms who are trapped halfway and not meeting sustainability standards.
There are
many.
Yeah, and they want to exit out.
And they want to exit out.
Yeah, and liquidity is not flushed and they're stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the main tenets, right? Whether Malaysia is going to be successful in our VC and PE ventures is to look into those really core tenets. You know, if we say we want to go into an energy transition plan, our industrial plan, I think we need to pivot back and look at our VC and PE ideas, right? Are we cultivating enough of those?
Okay, let's look at some of the technologies, some of the sectors that you mentioned. Technology is one of them. There's also macro issue when it comes to, say, the Silicon Valley war, or sorry, the Silicon War, China and the US are in this very prolonged kind of IP battle. That's one area that, you know, I tend to look at every now and then. We're looking at firms leaving China, big firms, and moving into other markets, including Kulim High Tech Park in India and many more. We're also looking at technology companies that is based out of Israel that might not necessarily want to stay in Israel and they want to be an American firm and so on. So these kind of environment, do you think that investors need to look at all these geopolitical environments before they also think about how to spend money publicly in public markets?
No, I think don't make your lives too complicated that way. You know, leave it to
Yeah, folks like principal.
Fund managers.
Yes, yes, yes.
To figure out the difficult asset allocation. Mm. But you think about it, right? And I asked my colleagues in China, you know, money going out. And they're like, they looked at me and said, we have 1.4 billion people, right?
Yeah.
And we still have a lot of capital. Mm. And look at TikTok, right?
ByteDance is one of the top three most valuable companies probably held.
Exactly, and has reached a global audience.
Oh yes,
right, enormously.
But attracting all the naysayers now, we're seeing, you know, TikTok being banned here and there, and all that, at least the conversation of it.
But having said that, right, paradigms have shifted. As I mentioned earlier, you cannot not be in China, right? The level of technology and innovation and testing, and you know, 1.4 billion, that's a big number.
Final word, Munira, are you optimistic about 2024?
I'm always optimistic about investment. As I mentioned, we must always, always remain invested. Mm-hmm. We remain neutral in all asset classes, but you've got to be invested. So in short, I think 2024 will still be another interesting year, but I think we'll have more to play with in all the asset classes, equity, public listed, equities, and also the private markets as well as fixed income.
I feel that we're going to see a lot of clarity as well because of AI and geopolitical tensions and many more, healthcare and some of the new sectors, as well as energy transition. These are all like happening right now, 2023, and therefore it kind of firms up, I wouldn't say mature, but just kinds of firms up and you know the dust will settle and we'll see what's what. That's how I feel. Do you feel that that is an okay kind of thesis to hang upon?
Yeah, I think smart money institutional investors already have a discerning view, right? And money is already deploying in those areas. Mm. So that sense of clarity, and the clarity is on the risk premium that you're taking on. Mm. As an increased clarity on risk premium that we're taking on and where to allocate. And therefore, hence our view to remain neutral and remain invested.
Thank you very much. That was Munira Khairuddin, the country head, as well as the CEO of Principal Malaysia. We have had plenty of conversations like this. Do check that out. Just go to astroawani.com, look for Principal Malaysia. You can also go to their website to find out more, as well as a possible conversation to be had with them directly. So do check that out with Principal Malaysia. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.